Bushu nende na wimagani dog. Beshugo benesia kwe indigo, mangin du dem. Ga usa squaji mekagin jun jiba. Ga mesqua wako kag inda. Elaine Fleming nindishina kaz. Oh, I'm thinking just hard here. I'm thinking about a committee that I sat on, and it was a Chief Bemidji Statute Committee, and it's a committee that worked for about 6 years to raise money and make everything a go so that we could erect a statue of Shay Naushkung, who was known as Chief Bemidji to many people in history. And so because his statue was just dedicated and unveiled on Saturday, June 6th, to probably 200 to 300 people at Library Park in Bemidji. And it's just real interesting that when I first sat with this committee, that immediately I wanted to use it as an opportunity to share the history of the Ojibwe people. And the articles that, the information that we had on Shay Naushkung at the time were newspaper stories. And so we thought we would teach about him through the lives and times that he experienced. And so because we just have been through this time of his unveiling of his beautiful statue, that I'd like to retell the life and times of Shay Naushkung, also known as Chief Bemidji. And so, you know, he was a man who lived, we think, to be about 70 years old. And in those 70 years of life, he experienced, all our people experienced trauma and loss for the Ojibwe people. And historical trauma is carried in one's body. And this trauma is passed on in a generational manner. Historical events in the three eras in which Shay Naushkung lived affected his wellness, his spiritual, emotional, physical, and intellectual wellness. And it also affected community wellness. In newspaper accounts of Shay Naushkung, he was reported as being a man of peace, well-liked by the settlers of Bemidji. In 1883, he and his family and other castes and Leech Lake Ojibwe made their first permanent settlement on the south shore of Lake Bemidji. An elder and a spokesman for the group, he welcomed the first white settlers to the Bemidji area in 1888. When Shay Naushkung shared the name of the lake, Bemidji Gamag, which means water moving sideways along the shore, which has to do with the Mississippi River running through Lake Bemidji, the settlers thought he was sharing his name, so they mistakenly named the new village after him, Bemidji, rather than his actual name of Shay Naushkung. And later, he petitioned to remain on his land in Bemidji, but he was forced to remove to his allotment on the Cass Lake Reservation in 1903. He died in 1904 of pneumonia on his allotment land, and he had hoped that he would be buried on his land in Bemidji, but he wasn't. And so, Shay Naushkung, what that means is it rattles. And my wa'a is Kathy Hedberg, a Benesique Thunderbird woman. And she told me about the rattle. She said that the rattle, when you shake it, that it shakes away bad feelings, things that can hurt you. And so it's a very powerful name. And when I thought about Shay Naushkung, I was thinking as we dedicated his statue that that's what we were doing. We were sharing the history of his life and times as best we could. And then we were shaking away the negativity and the hurt and the pain, the anger of those times. So Shay Naushkung, he rattles. We think he was born around 1830. But we're not quite sure. They say that it was a time of stars falling from the sky. But of course, they didn't keep track of the census back in those days. And he was born in 1834, we think. And the removal era for the Ojibwe was 1830 to 1854. And Che Nawishkung, his lifetime was from 1834, we think, to 1904, 70 years. So during the removal era, there's a saying that there's a quote that was given at a treaty negotiation near Fort Snelling, Machigabo, on July 27, 1837. He said, quote, "My father, listen to me. Of all the country that we grant you, we wish to hold on to a tree where we get our living and to reserve the streams where we drink the waters that give us life," end quote. And it was just that whole thing about the resources that we respected and that we sustained our livelihoods off of these resources. And during the removal era, the government, they pretty much ignored us back in 1830. But later on, as they were looking for timber to build their cities, they would look our way up here in the north where we had those great white pine forests. Great white pine forests, the last in the nation. But there were back matters that the Ojibwe people remembered during these hard times. And it began in this removal period. And one of them began with the 1847 treaty with the pillager band. And in it, almost 1 million acres of land along the Long Prairie River was ceded for a reservation for the Ho-Chunk and Menominee. The pillagers thought that they were lending the land to the U.S. And they were hoping for peace with the Dakota people. The Ojibwe looked at this new reservation as a buffer zone between the two nations. And the pillagers agreed to no financial payments or annuities. And the land was ceded for blankets, cloth, 200 warranted beaver traps, and 75 Northwest guns. And that land, it was supposed to remain Indian country. The Ho-Chunks and the Menominee, however, chose not to live there. And then when they left, the land was thrown open to settlers. So that 1847 treaty became a back matter to us. It became something unsettled. And we would request that to be settled, that we should be reimbursed, we should be paid for that land that was taken from us. And at that time, in 1847, Che Nawishkung was 13 years old. So this is something that he would know about, and he would since the Ojibwe were always referencing it, that he would be very aware of it and understand that loss. In 1850, there was the Sandy Lake tragedy. And this one was where Governor Alexander Ramsey, he wanted to remove the Ojibwe from Michigan and Wisconsin to Minnesota in an effort to have their annuity monies flow into the Minnesota Territory. And the government would also build schools, agencies, and farms for the Ojibwe, and that would create greater wealth for the new territory. So in 1850, 5,000 Ojibwe came from Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota to Sandy Lake for their annuity payment scheduled for October 25th. However, those annuities and supplies weren't available when they arrived. The food that was provided for them was spoiled, and disease and harsh winter conditions caused the death of 150 Ojibwe while camped at Sandy Lake. And you know October 25th in northern Minnesota, how cold it is. So those annuities, they arrived on December 3rd. but it included only a 3-day food supply. It didn't include any of the cash that the Ojibwe expected and that they could have used to buy provisions to travel back home. And Alexander thought that the Ojibwe would stay in Minnesota throughout the winter and possibly remain there. And Sandy Lake would become that new place for the annuities. So the relocation of the Ojibwe to Minnesota would also free up land in Michigan and Wisconsin for settlers. But many of the Ojibwe people, they decided to travel back to their homelands in mid-December. And because those waterways were frozen, they walked. So another 250 of them died going home to Wisconsin and Michigan. It's not known how many of the 1,500 Ojibwe who came from upper Minnesota died going home. But afterward, it was decided to allow the Ojibwe to remain in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota on our own reservations. And so I'll continue the story about the removal era and about Sandy Lake in the next session. Miigwech, bisantawi eg, miigwech, mi'u.